to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. Today I talk with Andrew Verbancourt, partner and design lead at Headway, a product design firm that specializes in working with startups. Andrew and I talk about how a business major got into design, creating value for users, working in an agile environment, podcasting apps, and more, all right after this. Thanks to Slaptastic for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar with Slaptastic, they create amazing monthly sticker packs featuring amazing artists like Brad Woodard, Luke Flowers, Blake Stevenson, Nate Baird, Andrew Kolb, Matt Koffenberg, and many more. Every month, you get six or more stickers shipped directly to your door, no matter where you live in the world, for just $8. And between now and the end of the year, when you visit Slaptastic.com, and sign up using the promo code DECEMBER16, you'll get your first month of stickers for just $5. So what are you waiting for? Head over to Slaptastic.com and get your stickers today. I want to thank our friends over at Jack Prince for sponsoring this episode. Whatever you need printed, they can do it. Do you need stickers? Jack Prince can do it. Do you need t-shirts? Jack Prince can do it. Embroidered hats, business cards, banners? Jack Prince can do it. They make great stuff at a great price. Speaking of banners, Jack Prince has their lowest prices on banners ever right now. Some of them are up to 70% off. I just looked up the cost of an 8-foot by 5-foot banner. How much do you think it should cost? $200? $300? More? You can get it at Jack Prince for just $70. While we're talking about great offers, let's talk about the fact that Jack Prince is offering a free silver ink upgrade going on right now. But it's not just on silver ink. If you're looking to get something embroidered, you can get free silver thread, too. So when you get something printed or embroidered, now, through the end of the year, add some silver ink into that design. If you love pocket-sized notebooks, check out Jack Prince Pocket Notes. They come with tons of great options, making them perfect for gifts, giveaways, branding, and custom office supplies. Custom pocket notebooks are sized for quick sketching and note-taking. Plus, unlike other printers who, you know, make you design around their logo and have all those parameters like that, Jack Prince builds their custom notebooks from the ground up, giving you the entire cover to customize in vivid full color. Jack Prince makes great, affordable stuff for designers like you and I. They focus on quality and customer service and have been loyal Creative South sponsors for years. Why not pick them next time you need stickers, banners, or pocket notebooks printed? Plus, Jack Prince is giving you a great discount. You can save up to $75 on your next order. Just use promo code CS16podcast at checkout or visit jack.ink/design. Are you ready to explore your creativity and meet a ton of new friends while you're doing it? Then head over to creativesouth.com right now and get your Creative South tickets. Join us April 6th through 9th in Columbus, Georgia for Creative South, where you come as friends and leave as family. If you like the podcast and want to help support us, head over to patreon.com/creativesouth. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. Plus, when you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts, and you could even get your own podcast episode. So please, help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Andrew, thanks for joining me this evening.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Jason.
So why don't we start off and tell everybody where you grew up.
So I grew up in Titletown, Green Bay, Wisconsin. If you guys are familiar with the Packers, I grew up here and born and raised. I went to school in Minnesota. So I went out to Winona State University and played football and actually majored in business out there. Made my way back here after and been kind of traveling a little bit. I was in Hawaii for a while and now I'm back in Wisconsin.
So when you said you went to Winona State and you majored in business. Most of the time I'm talking to designers in here and I know you do design stuff now with Headway and all.
Right.
How do you make that transition from being a business major to where you are now?
Yeah, I think, you know, just growing up, it was a combination of the two. You know, I started out designing more of a hobby, right? Like, I think it was in high school, my friends and I, we had this snowboard team. I'm doing air quotes now, snowboard team. And we wanted to put videos of us bailing online. And so, took an actually early class in high school in HTML and started designing that way. And then kind of as I got to college, I was still doing it for bands and people that I knew that were actually paying me for it. And, you know, it was a good way to kind of make some money at the time, and then just started falling in love with, you know, design, more visual design back then, and MySpaces and things like that. But, you know, just kind of.
And who was in your top eight?
Just getting my feet wet, all kinds of visual design, print, that sort of thing, while I was going to school for business, and kind of came out of that, you know, doing startups. So we started a few startups ourselves, you know, things that – some that took off and are still going on now, things that have failed, and really got more into, like, the UX side of things. And that's where I think, you know, the business side of, you know, my career, or I guess my education, really started to kick in, and balancing, you know, business needs with user needs. And that's kind of led us to where we are today with Headway and what we really do now.
Sure. And for those people who aren't familiar with Headway, can give me a little background on it and explain it in layman's terms, I guess.
Okay. Yeah, Headway. So we're a small team here based out of Green Bay or De Pere, Wisconsin. And we basically partner with startups and corporations to bring new projects, new product ideas to market. We do, you know, validation, user interviews, making sure that we're building what the customer wants and needs and, you know, isn't just asking for. So we do a lot of diving into what motivations they have, and familiar things like jobs to be done framework. We do lean UX, kind of along with the whole lean startup movement. We really started doing a lot of things and trying to make the most of resources that startups have. And, you know, we really love partnering with entrepreneurs and that are funded and that are, you know, not funded.
Money
as well.
Is good, yes.
Yeah, money is good. But, you know, people that are passionate and are willing to do the work to get it there, you know. So that's kind of what we do. We do everything from design to development and have a pretty good balance between design and engineering here at Headway.
Gotcha. And on top of that, I know you guys do some of your own products. And, you know, let's specifically get into the one that kind of connected us, Remarks, which is a podcasting app. Kind of tell everybody where that genesis came from and a little bit about it.
Yeah. So Remarks is a podcasting app. And the, you know, the idea behind it is that you have a lot of people that are tuning into podcasts, and there's not a lot of focused or contextual, I guess, conversation and threads around specific podcasts. And so we set out to create a podcasting app that, you know, people could do just that. As you listen, you know, it's all pre-recorded podcasts. So similar to this one where, you know, people are tuning in after the fact, after it's already been recorded, and able to weigh in on thoughts. You know, you see show notes kind of in line. You see a lot of the things where you get, you know, contextual feedback as you're listening. And so where it stemmed from is one of my friends that I met out at a startup weekend when I was in Hawaii kind of approached us to be a design partner on it. And so we only handled the design aspect of it. And Adam Smith is the developer, and he kind of had the idea. And, yeah, you know, we took it to the market from there, and you can find it in the App Store now.
So what was it when you were talking with Adam that, you know, made you think, you know, this is something that we should work together on?
Yeah, I think it's a really cool idea. I think that, you know, it's hard to – even now, you know, it's hard to get traction, and we're going through a lot of the stuff we go through with, you know, our early stage startups is just validating an idea. You know, we have a lot of assumptions and got a lot of feedback kind of leading up to it. But once you launch it, you realize that people maybe act differently when apps are in the store. I think it's just a testament to, you know, shipping things and shipping something early, whatever the smallest version of your prototype is, and getting feedback. But, it was something that I think podcasting is really blowing up. You know, we have a podcast ourselves called Seaworthy, but I think it's really cool how you connect people from all over. And not only, you know, you get to get the perspectives of people listening, which is the most interesting, versus maybe kind of disparate on like Twitter or Facebook, or, you know, some podcasts have their own message board, but it's really kind of, you know, locked. So trying to just democratize that feedback and, you know, make use of people that are listening to it and their insights.
What have the challenges been with building that app out and kind of seeing it to market?
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is just, you know, as something that is, you know, not funded, and it's something that's kind of, you know, that we partnered on, it's being able to dedicate the time and resources that it needs in order to, you know, to validate, to take different steps, pivots, and create those experiments of, you know, what exactly is going to get us to that next level. You know, what are users mm-hmm. going to respond to? And I think that's, you know, that's been the biggest challenge, and that often is, you know, a startup with no resources is very difficult to get churning.
Like I said before, money is good.
Right, exactly.
It certainly makes things a lot easier. So, you know, you and I have been talking, was it 6-7 months now?
Yeah, I think so.
Ever since the Montoose, which is ironic because I don't think we even ran into each other at the Montoose.
Yeah, I don't think
started
we
started talking right afterwards. I was busy trying not to die after having not been skiing in 25 years.
Yeah.
I don't know about you.
Yeah, no. I mean, for me, it was, you know, it was like heaven. It was, I think we had 2 to 3 feet of powder. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was awesome conditions for us. So my wife was with us, and she.
Was she? Oh, good.
She was trying not to fall as well, and trying to help, you know, help her, not being a skier myself, but trying to give her as many tips as I could.
Keep the tips up.
Right. Pizza, fries.
Yeah, exactly.
That whole thing.
That's exactly where I was about to go.
Yeah.
though a testament to, apparently I'm still hungry even after dinner, that you said pizza and fries, and I was like, oh, that sounds good. That was where my first thought went, not skiing.
Gotcha.
So, you know, as I was saying, you and I kind of started talking after that, and we bounced ideas off each other. And I'm just curious to, aside from the fact that I have a podcast, mm-hmm. what made you, you know, reach out to me and stay in contact with me of, this is going to sound egotistical when I'm phrasing it like this, of just asking me, you know, for more and more, because I'm, you know, aside from the fact that I have a podcast, mm-hmm. I'm not nearly as much in the tech world and things like that. So development wise, I'm sure there are probably people out there who would be better to bounce ideas off of and better to ask that those questions of, mm-hmm. which I'm sure you did as well.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's the biggest thing is just talking to a lot of people. But I think the thing that's interesting is, you know, I'm familiar with the Creative South as a brand. And so, mm-hmm. you know, super interested in, you know, how do we create value for people that aren't, you know, don't have millions of listens every month, right? How do we create value, you know, a podcasting app that creates value for people at kind of at every level? And so just kind of mm-hmm. understanding some of, you know, the hurdles and barriers and motivations for you to do this podcast and, you know, what type of things have to fall in line, I think is super important. But, I think, I don't know what else. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so when you were talking to other podcasters as well, was there a common theme amongst them of what those hurdles and barriers were?
Yeah, I think a lot of them, you know, it's sponsorship, and there's a few other, you know, there's a few networks out there when it comes to podcast sponsorship that, you know, being able to obviously fund a podcast or make some extra money from it as mm-hmm. a means to, you know, to validate you dedicating more time to it or, you know, trying to do more podcasts, whatever it might be. I think that's a big
sure.
thing, you know. It comes back to the money thing. I think there's other people where, you know, it's motivations. And the biggest thing is, you know, if someone's only going to adopt something halfway, it's probably not going to take off. And so
sure.
unless your entire listening base was on it, it's very difficult to gain traction from people. And the cost of them ditching their current podcasting app for one that is not as full featured, that just has, you know, maybe some more social components to it, for a lot of users, that was, you know, that was too much of a jump for them. And so
sure.
we kind of faced a, you know, a barrier to, you know, do we want to invest the time and resources to make this a full featured podcasting app, or do we want to make this, you know, or is it just social, or, you know, do we see a larger vision for this, and does it, you know, is it worth the risk of investing all this time and money into trying to compete with you know, iTunes podcasting app or Overcast or some of these other things. And at the end of the day, without, you know, without funding, and we didn't never try to get funding, you know, it's kind of something that is just, you know, sitting there right now, and we have people still using it and podcasts still using it and that sort of thing. But, you know, it's hard to get people to switch.
It's a tough market to get buy-in because it's so segmented.
Right. And, you know, but I think, yeah, the other problem, you know, for podcasters is just the time to do it, right? They're, you know, right as it stands now, the only way to get your show notes and information into your episodes was to go on the iOS app and do that. Well, really, you have mm-hmm. to fast forward through it. You have to know where your time marks are. You have to be pretty organized or just listen to it and add them as you go. And that's a big barrier. You know what I mean?
Sure.
You know, you come to
do you think that's one of those, because I know right now it's still kind of a side project and it's more of a passion project, but without funding it makes it tough to devote time because you got to pay the bills with other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think those are features that you are going to be able to roll out eventually? I know they're features that you want to roll out, but
yeah, I mean, potentially. I mean, I think right now, you know, there's a few things we'd need to see. And I think, you know, we'd need to be able to compete a lot more one-to-one, if not, you know, better than current podcast apps. And there's, you know, a lot of big gaps, like, you know, just knowing when podcasts you subscribe to, when there's new ones, you know, continuity between the web app and the iOS app, between, you know, your subscriptions and, you know, what are your friends listening to? But I think there was this larger vision of, you know, having it be a social podcast recommendation engine where mm-hmm. you can see exactly what your friends are listening to without asking. You know, I think there's some things when you get into podcasting that are more personal that people might not want other people to know they're listening to, or, you know, some personal problems they're going through, that there's a podcast for that, and you know, they're kind of going through it. But I think, you know, a lot of the questions I get is, hey, what podcast are you listening to? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And there's really not anything that's captured it or publicized it as well, you know, as I think that could be done.
Sure. Well, speaking of podcasts and what you listen to and things like that, you've got your own podcast. So let's you know, kind of transition into talking about that just a little bit.
Yeah. So our podcast is called Seaworthy, and we started it, I want to say 3 or 4 months ago. And we talk about just building successful products. So a lot of the stuff we're talking about now of, you know, how do we validate certain ideas and how do we know, you know, when it's time to stick or when it's time to, you know, to, I guess, drop something, right? And focus on something else. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's important for entrepreneurs to learn. But so we share, you know, insights from our own process here at Headway, what we do, things we've learned with working with clients. We interview, you know, some of our current clients now and just get perspectives on how they're building their businesses, whether that's an application, whether that's, you know, it could be a web app, it could be an e-commerce project, and just getting insights so that entrepreneurs can listen in and they can learn from other people, because oftentimes, you know, it's people that learn fast enough, you know, and don't run out of resources that are ultimately able to succeed. So that's what we try to do, and just focus in on building successful products.
Gotcha. What secrets have you found so far?
One is there's no secrets. No secrets or shortcuts. Yeah. You know, and it's a lot of hard work, whether, you know, it could be the best idea out there, but there's ideas that, you know, and it's pretty cliche, but you know, an overnight success, 20 years in the making. And I think you see that, you know, that thread pretty common throughout technology, throughout anything, you know, sports, whatever it is. It's just that there's no magic pill for it. You have to, you know, focus on the right things. You have to focus on the users. You have to make sure that you understand their needs, and you can, you know, the solution that you may potentially create is valuable enough for them to switch, right? Otherwise you have to, you know, you have to dip it or pivot or whatever the case is. But there's a quote by one of my designer friends, Joni Malink, that says, you know, it's not a true validation effort if you're not willing to kill off the idea. And I think, you know, a lot of people fall too in love with their solution and not enough.
Write that one down.
Yeah, not enough with the problem they're trying to solve. And that's, you know, Ash Maurya says that, and I couldn't agree more, is that you have to empathize so much with your customer that their problem becomes your problem, and you want to find the best way to solve it and really add, you know, add to their life, enhance their life.
Yeah. So, you know, kind of tying that back into Headway, you know, one of the things that you mentioned there is the 20 years overnight success and the hard work that goes into it. When you're partnering with companies to help them achieve their goals, do you ever run into the case where, you know, on paper and up front, they seem like everything is great and they're willing to put in the hard work, and then you find out a little bit later that they're a flash in the pan? How do you deal with that when you find that sort of thing? Because I think everybody's run across that in business in some point.
Yeah. Well, you know, we try to do a lot of upfront education that, you know, we're not trying to, you know, pull any smoke and mirrors that, you know, it is hard work and you're going to have to put in a lot of time. You're going to have to do a lot more things than you thought you would. And, you know, just because we're building a product and doing some of the validation stuff doesn't mean that you should stop doing that stuff yourself. You know, it's really a collaboration effort. But when you get to that point where you feel like, you know, maybe people aren't in it or aren't in it enough as they were at the start, you know what I mean? Like they start to see the hard work, you know, build up and start to fade out a little bit. And it's just having some tough conversations. And, you know, we're fully transparent here on how we're feeling. We do, you know, Agile and Scrum, and we try to build really that into our retro of, you know, is everyone still in this? Like, is your heart still in this? Knowing, you know, how far you've come and how far there might be to go. Is this something that you're still into? Because, you know, no one wants to waste their time, their resources, their life building something that no one wants and that they don't want to build.
Sure. So I have a follow-up question based on two things you said there that are going to make me sound like an old man. You know, I hear people talk about Agile and Scrum a lot, and I can get a general gist of what that is, but how... Give me a old guy who doesn't work in the tech industry overview of those.
Gotcha. So basically, you know, we work in 2-week sprints, and a sprint is really just a time boxed. It's just a time box way to organize like effort. So what we're going to do. So basically, what we'll do is say we have the next 2 weeks in front of us. We'll go ahead and prioritize that based on business needs. That could be user needs, requests, features. It could be stuff that we validated, you know, in the UX phase. But say, hey, we want to build this stuff and get these features pushed by the end of this sprint. So we'll go ahead and we'll estimate effort, which is just a way to estimate how long, you know, the effort that things will take in relation to other cards or other things that we've done, not necessarily time. And so you kind of have the whole team estimate until you get to pretty much a consensus. And there's a really cool tool called planningpoker.com that actually I had Pete Bernardo on the on our podcast a few weeks back talking about that and how they use Planning Poker to plan out their Agile teams. But you estimate effort and then you kind of come to a consensus of what you're going to be able to do in that 2-week period. And then when you get to the end of the 2-week period, you have a, you know, you have a demo day where you really show progress, and then you have a retro at the end of that, or it might be, you know, that following week. But, you know, what do we do well? What didn't go well? You know, what can we do better? And just this idea of constant improvement and like holding each other accountable at the same time and making sure that you have checkpoints along the way to reprioritize something. You know, so we have a daily stand up, which is just, you know, 15-minute call on what we're going to focus on for that day and kind of how that builds into the sprint.
So the Scrum is essentially the team. The Agile is the working environment. And then the sprint is the time frame.
Yeah, sure. Pretty close, yeah.
Trying to get it straight in my head there. Because I hear it thrown around all the time, and I always feel dumb asking, so I feel like I'd be better off feeling dumb on here where there's no repercussions to my job. Thankfully, you know, I work for an engineering firm, so we don't throw that one around a whole lot, but the being able to know what it is and communicate better with people is always nice.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's backtrack with Headway, because when we jumped on the call, first thing we did was compared what we were drinking.
Yeah.
And you mentioned one of the nice things about throwing parties. And then you said, you know, it was kind of your 1-year mark. So Headway's been going for a year.
Yep.
What's that been like for you guys? Because, you know, you basically starting from nothing up to the point where you are now, where you're, mm-hmm. you know, working in a lot of environments with a lot of different teams on different stuff.
Right. I mean, well, so we're still a small team, but, you know, when we started out, we were working, we were kind of co-working. I was in Hawaii at the time, you know, the rest of my partners.
And you decided to come back to Wisconsin?
Right. Yeah, I get that a lot. And so, you know, our risk was kind of mitigated because we actually sold ourselves into, you know, full-time contracts before we left what we were doing. It was kind of this idea that we had, you know, building up. We had done the branding, you know, previously in that year and something we wanted to start. We just didn't know what was the right time. So we kept looking for the right partners and the right clients to work with. And mm-hmm. so we really called the 1 year, you know, September 1st, which was obviously last month. But we really kind of had, you know, a grace period of like 6 months where we kind of worked on it, you know, worked on the branding. What do we want? What do we want to stand for? Just building up a lot of the internal stuff while we were at our jobs. So we were able to, you know, mitigate that risk of going full time Headway and starting to build
sure.
something.
So you guys had knew that this was something you wanted to do, and you were putting all the pieces of the puzzle in place before you went out on your own, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. So how many of your core team when you started, how many people were there?
We were four people.
Four people?
Yep. And so that we were all partners at that point.
Okay.
And then we grew to seven in the past year. We actually lost a couple of people since then just to some other passions, which is good. But, you know, I think that's – and now we're in the process of hiring, you know, a couple designers, a couple developers, and, you know, more product-focused people to kind of build out for the clients that we work with. So,
sure.
Some ebbs and flows in business for sure.
Yeah. So is there a specific industry that you guys try to target that you feel is your wheelhouse, or do you try to run the gamut and try a little bit of everything?
Well, yeah. So we do have experience in a lot of things, but a lot of our clients are in, you know, I guess it boils down to like social or communication platforms.
Sure.
Like one of them is a recruiting platform for university. It's called Handshake. And so we've worked with them over the past year or so and you know, building that up. And what they try to do is democratize recruiting for universities and career centers and employers and that sort of thing. But, you know, we also work with smaller startups from the area here that are looking to validate their idea and build it out. One of the other industries we're in pretty big is the financial, I guess fintech is what they call it.
Fintech.
Yeah. And so, you know, working with companies that actually, you know, are focused on raising investment for, you know, food companies, or they're, you know, focused on other things like lending, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Those are two kind of big verticals. And we have our own product that we spun up actually prior to Headway, but is now a Headway venture called Attack Tracker. And so that's a healthcare product that really looks to improve the STEMI or heart attack and stroke process improvement. So really measuring, you know, each step along the way and showing EMS, which is, you know, ambulance systems in the hospital, mm-hmm. how they can improve and what metrics they can improve on, you know, according to American Heart Association standards and even their own, you know, set of goals that may be a little bit more ambitious than what the AHA puts forward. So
was there a specific incident that kind of precipitated that app being built?
There isn't. So we actually partnered with two people from a local hospital that had the idea, and they came to us and kind of partnered as their tech partner and design partner there. But yeah, nothing specifically that triggered that, but just something where.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
Because yeah. there's no good way that one comes about if there is a specific incident.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, we just get to this point where we're trying to, you know, everything we try to do is make a difference through design, whether that's, you know, actual visual design, it's design thinking, it's being intentional about hopefully making people's lives better through these products, whether that's connecting them, improving their processes, that sort of thing.
Sure. So, you know, Headway growing up and moving forward since you're now into year two, which has got to be a relief to be able to say.
Yeah.
What are you guys wanting to do, and what do you see your goal is?
Yeah, I think, you know, so a lot of our clients now are more national, you know, in San Francisco, kind of in Texas, Las Vegas, New York, and probably only about 10 or 15% of our clients are actually in Wisconsin. And so I don't know if anyone has seen it, but Wisconsin's startup charts and business charts are, you know, it's pretty much dead last. I think it's 48 or 49th. And so what we're trying
to... You guys are behind Alabama?
Yeah. Yeah, we're behind everyone, I'm pretty sure.
Wow.
Maybe 50th. I don't know for sure, but... You know, we get a lot of reports. So we're
Oh, come on. What does Delaware really do?
They have the Delaware C Corps. That's about it.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, we're trying to do a lot of more community initiatives here. We brought Design Disruptors to the area with Envision in July. And we're really just trying to bring, you know, I guess make tech cool again in this area, because there's a lot of manufacturing corporations here that are looking to do innovation. There's a lot of, you know, internal process improvement that can be done. But I think there's kind of this old tech mentality here. And so that's one of our, you know, big initiatives, is just trying to get more involved in the community and give back. And you know, we have an apprenticeship program that we have, where we actually have one of the developers that came through it is now a full-time employee. And so looking to bring more people onto that. We actually have, you know, two more positions coming up. Actually, next week, I think they'll be posted. But, you know, just trying to focus on that and focus on building – the team with the right people who care about, you know, continuous improvement, learning. We kind of adopted Google's and I guess Thoughtbot's approach to, you know, how we manage time. And that's really a 32 billable client hours a week and like 8 hours of investment time. And so we really try to fight for that, although it's not, you know, it's not always possible on some projects. Some projects are more engineering focused, but, you know, just trying to, I guess, have a community of learning and a culture of learning here at Headway. And, you know, that's something that we're fighting for.
I just talked to the guys over at Mossio. They were on the podcast that came out this past week.
Okay.
And they have that same philosophy of the 32-8.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, having been friends with those guys for a while, it seems to work really well from them. They, you know, And they're big into the, you know, there's no real emergencies in this. You don't need to be putting in more than 40 hours.
Right.
You know, not that there's not times where that doesn't happen, but,
right,
you know, nobody's going to die if their website or their, you know, SaaS product doesn't get built out 2 hours earlier.
Right. And I think that's part of, you know.
Though I guess in your case with the heart attack app, that might actually happen.
Yeah. I think, you know, hopefully not with that. But, yeah, that's part of setting expectations. I think we mentioned before, you know, doing that education.
Sure.
And, you know, this is how we work. And we feel like this balance is best at, you know, communicating that with clients is a big thing, so that they don't call you at 10 p.m. on a Friday and just say, hey, I was thinking about this, you know, something that's not an emergency or I don't know, something.
Yeah. Well, since, you know, like you said, you're trying to get involved with the community more and things like that. Are there specific things you see going on in Green Bay that are exciting to you?
Yeah. So we were part of the startup of the first code camp in Green Bay. It's called Code Convoy. And Kevin McGillivray is actually leading that up. He's not a member of our team, but someone in the community. He used to do some work with Block and mentorship. But I think, you know, that's kind of key, is just, you know, being able to get people excited about tech and get people started, you know. And there's a lot of jobs in the area here that are growing in, you know, engineering, in design, that people just aren't prepared for. You know, you come from a 4-year school or something else that isn't really specialized, and you don't come with any experience on how to do a lot of these things that it takes to build digital products, you know, in the world today. And so, you know, that we're excited about that and partnering with them and some other people to, you know, provide opportunities through our apprenticeships to really gap that, you know, where you go through a boot camp and now you need, you know, professional experience in a, you know, an agency or a startup, you know, maybe a startup that we work with, and just getting them that real world experience to get them to the next level and kind of mentored up, you know, in the hard and soft skills.
Sure. Well, I think that's one of those that I mean, even when I was in school, that the university systems have a real failing that is they can teach theory all the day long, but theory only gets you so far in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I was going to restructure the way the university system works, I think the first 2 years would be theory and the next 2 years would have to be almost entirely practical.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think we would be a lot better off for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I mean, a lot of things you can only learn by doing yourself or by experience or, you know, if you're lucky enough to have some mentors or read a lot of books. I think books are, you know, one of the best things you can invest your time and money into.
Sure.
Just because you get the insights from people that you could probably never talk to unless you knew someone who knew someone. But, you know, a lot of good things and lessons that you can learn from and, you know, accelerate your business or your life, whatever it is.
So follow-up question on that. What are your favorite books at the moment?
My favorite books, so I'm rereading Essentialism, which is by Greg uh-huh. McKeown. Big fan of that. It's really about saying no to the things that don't matter and, you know, saying yes to more of the things that do. One of the other books I'm reading now is called The More of Less by Joshua Becker. And so that's kind of about minimalism. It's along the same lines, but it's really just about creating margin in your life to focus on, you know, the things that matter. And I think a lot of those principles apply to startups and a lot of the things we do in the professional world in that making sure that, you know, you're taking your limited time and resources and investing it on things that are going to create value for you or other people.
Sure.
And so those are two of my favorite books, I guess, of all time right now. outside of, you know, some design books and things like that. But.
Sure. Well, I mean, those two both seem to go hand in hand with what you're doing over at Headway. So that makes sense.
What about you? Anything you're reading now?
What am I reading right now? I have a bunch of books piled up that are by Seth Godin that I haven't started reading. And then I am reading a book on meditation that doesn't take it from, and I'm blanking on the title. I don't know why. Like 10 steps to easy meditation or something like that. But it doesn't take it from the hippy dippy, you know, let's all rub ourselves down with patchouli and sit in a sweat tent somewhere. It takes it from a bunch of this stuff is bullshit. But if you move past the bullshit
mm-hmm.
and just get down to focus on breathing, focus on pushing your thoughts aside, and you got to start off slow. It's the first time you do it. You'll be lucky to get through a minute without having an uninterrupted thought. So
for sure.
No, go ahead.
Have you checked out Headspace at all?
Yes.
Okay. Love that app. I use it now.
That's one of the ones that got me into doing it. Just because, I mean, honestly, like I deal with anxiety and depression. I've talked about it here on the podcast quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But lately, the depression hasn't been as bad as the anxiety, and it's, you know, I don't want to take a bunch of Xanax and
right,
you know, stuff. I almost said Zantac, which is a completely different medicine. But I don't want to take a bunch of drugs. Those make me feel foggy headed and right. That's not what I want.
The opposite of what you want.
But by the same account, I don't want to feel like my heart is going to burst out of my chest because I'm, you know, having an irrational thought about something.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to figure out a way to calm my head and get into my thoughts, and Headspace was one of the first apps that I checked out for it. And then there was a podcast, and I don't remember what the podcast was. I think it was Michael Ian Black. He's got a new podcast out. You know who Michael Ian Black is? You remember that show Ed with the bowling center? So he was the annoying guy on there, and he was on the show The State. He was one of the guys on there. But he's got a podcast that's very NPR style, but it's really good and it's really insightful. And he talked to, and I'm going to blank on the guy's name, the guy who wrote the book. He's an anchor over at the Weekend News on ABC. He had a panic attack live on air like 5 or 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And started, you know, doing Buddhist style meditation and things like that, and to try to calm it. And, you know, his big problem with it was all of the hippy dippy bullshit that comes along with it. And he, you know, started seeing a therapist who kept, you know, even after he tried meditation on his own, kept saying, no, you really need to try this. And the guy just basically flat out plain language said, stop screwing around. Give it a try. You're going to suck. Excuse me. You're going to suck at it at first, but the more you practice at it, like anything else, the better you get.
Right.
The easier it is to go along. And it's been helping a lot when I actually remember to pay attention to it and practice it.
Yeah, so that's good.
That's the tough part, is the remembering to practice it. So, but yeah, Headspace was the one that really got me into thinking about doing something like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I think, you know, for me, I started it in Hawaii, but before that, we used to do it. So I played college football, and our coach used to actually talk us through, he called it visualization, right?
Yeah. But I mean, it's. We did that when I was in high school. We did swim team and we did visualization. And
yeah, it's
my problem was my coach never walked me through it, so I had no idea that's what it was.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead. And your coach walked you through, would do guided ones?
Yeah, would do kind of, you know, guided, similar to Andy from Headspace. And, you know, you're breathing and you're, you know, contracting certain muscles, getting loose and clearing your mind and really, you know, focusing on, you know, how your body feels and a lot of the same things. And, you know, that really helped me. I mean, there's so many times where, you know, pregame I'd visualize, you know, scoring or a certain play happening, and it would play out in the game that same way, which was kind of weird. But, you know, I couldn't complain with it. So
sort of out of body moment.
Yeah.
When things are actually happening. Weird deja vu.
Right. Like, so did I think this somewhere? Yeah. So.
Yeah. No, that, I mean, that's one of those that's been really helpful for me. It's, you know, I don't have as much time to read as I used to. So I've been trying to get back into, instead of just listening to podcasts, listening to, like, do they have a better term for it? Books on tape? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no tape anymore.
Audiobooks.
Audiobooks, yeah. Listening to audiobooks. So I have a queue of about five Seth Godin books that I want to read, Purple Cow being the first one.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I've got some two Malcolm Gladwell books in the queue as well. One of which I've already read, the 10,000 Hours one. But I'm interested to actually, like, go back and listen to it and see how much I remember.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I think the second time through anything, you find so many things, you know, even watching a movie, you find so many things that you missed, and it's always good.
I, you know, 30 years in, I still find stuff in Empire Strikes Back. So. To get full nerd.
Right.
It's the only movie that popped into my head at the time that I had recently rewatched. That's the joy of having kids, is you get to rewatch all the movies that you thought were cool when you were a kid.
Yeah.
And that came that I was about my kid's age when Empire Strikes Back came out. So it's been fun rewatching that with them. So kind of getting back on track here, you know, or going back to the beginning, I guess would be the better way. So when you were growing up, you mentioned you played football, mm-hmm. and that's that you went to college to play football and all that. At the time, and since you were a business major, were you interested in doing design? I know we talked about it a little bit, about how you did a little bit mm-hmm. here and there. But when you were in high school and all, was that something that you thought you were going to be doing? Or what were your goals and aspirations other than to play more football?
Yeah, I guess I wanted to be... I guess be in business. I didn't know if it was for myself or for other people. You know, always liked marketing. So didn't know if I wanted to go into marketing or, you know, business. So kind of took, you know, the middle route in business administration. And yeah, it was good. But I wanted to play football. I wanted to, you know. Yeah, just go to school for business, and it kind of, you know, came the way I think a lot of people do, is, you know, a happy accident, serendipity, whatever you want to call it, is, you know, just something that I fell in love with after getting paid to do it and really digging deeper and trying to push the limits of, you know, what's possible in tech and in design. But I think, you know, looking back, I was always, I guess, detail-oriented, which I think just came back to, like, everything I did, it was trying to be intentional with, like, where I put certain things in the house and, like, designing without knowing I was designing certain things. And, you know, not sure if it was OCD or what it was, but, you know, now looking back, it's, you know, everyone's a designer. Everyone, you know, does certain things with certain intentions.
Yeah, we all design our environment so to how it's going to best use us. And it may not make sense to somebody else, and
right.
it makes sense to you. Yeah, I get that.
Right. And yeah.
Yeah. It's always fun to see how much different your spouse designs things than you would design things.
Yeah, don't ask my wife.
Oh, I'm not having that conversation with my wife either. Don't worry.
Yeah. I'm like, really? You're putting that there? And she, yeah.
I've learned my lesson. 10 years in, I'm finally starting to seep in of things not to say.
Yeah.
Which just brings up a whole new batch of things that I probably shouldn't say. So hopefully she won't listen to this one and beat me upside the head.
Right, right. Good luck.
So you get out, when you get out of school, where do you end up going? Because you know, you were doing business admin. You said you'd been doing some HTML and CSS design and, you know, mostly just website stuff on the side.
Mm-hmm.
When you get out of school, what do you end up doing then?
So I got out of school, actually. I don't know. There's a lot of football details. I don't know.
Sure.
Went to a, you know, University of Minnesota Pro Day. Actually, you know, traveled there, spent the night, ended up getting turned away the day of the pro day, you know, so being able to really try out, I don't know if people are familiar, but try out in front of, you know, NFL scouts, like Vikings were there, Packers were there, a bunch of NFL teams, and got turned away at the, like, you know, 20 minutes before it started. And
so it's gotta be heartbreaking.
Yeah. And so I'm jonesing and, you know, end up leaving early and, you know, not something I wanted to watch, just kind of motivated. I think I got back and went to the gym, but yeah, after school, you know, still had the dream of you know, playing in the NFL. I had a pretty successful senior year at Winona, and so felt like I had the shot. I was, you know, almost 5'11", you know, 240 pounds, you know, had some pretty good stats, and so I chased that dream, you know, up until 2014, so just 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
But while I was doing that, you know, I was designing and, you know, you can only train so many hours of the day. So it was a good counterpart to, you know, to work at the computer while my body's healing in between these workouts. And, you know, mm-hmm. I worked at I had an agency with my brother and it was just us two and one of our other friends that, you know, was called Verbs and kind of designed and started getting into the applications in 2009. As I mentioned, we had, you know, so I graduated in 2008 and then 2009 we did our first startup. And kind of while I was training and going to combines and tryouts kind of throughout that, ended up playing, you know, in 2011 and 12, 2 years of professional indoor football for the mm-hmm. local team here in Green Bay. And so played that, got injured my first year, kind of just this hills and valleys of it. And, you know, all the while doing design and development and working with my brother and kind of some other people in the area, started a local community called Digital Fertilizer. And so every month mm-hmm. Since 2013, you know, we put on startup events every month and bring it in and try to, you know, part of the cultivating the community here in Green Bay and trying to bring people out and get them excited. So
gotcha.
Kind of a combination of things always.
Yeah,
coming
that's
up.
That's a interesting and winding path. So you're doing your own thing already with Verbs.
Mm-hmm.
At what point does that turn into Headway?
So we were working with a client at Verbs that was contracting us full time for design to work on their platform. And after about 6 months of contracting, they extended a full time offer to me to be the senior, you know, product designer and lead up their
sure.
team. And so that was around the same time that actually in 2014 that I kind of set the dream of football aside. I, you know, I felt like I had more in me. But mm-hmm. at the same time, you know, doing the research and just looking at, you know, the beating my body's taken so far. I played running back and fullback, so a pretty physical position. And, you know, I think there was a lot of research out about CTE and brain damage. And I had, you know, 4 concussions in my career, 5, probably many more if you count, you know, the smaller ones that I kind of played
through.
Ones
that you didn't know about, yeah.
Right. And things that, you know, sudden. But made the decision to, you know, to hang up the cleats. And my wife is, you know, she went to school for psychology and animal behavior. And she was out in Hawaii. You know, and that's kind of where this Hawaii dream comes in. And that was around the same time where, you know, the CCI is the company they offered to, you know, I could work remotely. And so we saw this as an opportunity of, you know, we're setting one dream aside. My wife had kind of planned this dream of hers in my head. And I said, hey, why not? Let's go do it. Let's explore the world. Let's, you know, so we moved out to Hawaii while I was leading this team at CCI. And while we were there, you know, just thinking of all the experiences we had, one of my partners was also at CCI.
Okay.
And so we decided that, you know, is this a long-term play for us? What else, you know, what are we really passionate about doing? And that's helping other people, you know, bring their dreams to life, you know, through startups, through other products, that sort of thing. And so started scheming about Headway, which wasn't called Headway at the times. It was still Verbs with my brother and Chris Schmitz. And so decided to, you know, kind of balance our full-time jobs with a couple of the projects we still had at Verbs and trying to figure out what the right balance was to get into, you know, full-time Headway. And that's kind of where our other partner, John, came into the mix probably a month later. And so that's kind of how we got the foursome of partners together,
gotcha.
And merge it into Headway. And, you know, previously at Verbs, we did so many things. You know, we used to have like a social media arm, which is really just one guy called Tweetsicles. And, we would manage
Tweetsicles.
You know, yeah. And we would manage, you know, people's social media and kind of tie that in. We had a lot of experience with performance marketing and like pay-per-click advertising, affiliate marketing, that sort of stuff.
Sure.
Just coming up, things that we dabbled in. And so we brought a lot of that knowledge to people. But when we started Headway, we said, let's do what we do best and where we think we can provide the most value. And that was actually building, you know, digital products for people. And so we really set a lot of that other stuff aside. We really just do, you know, mobile and web applications for people. We do the occasional marketing site, but that's kind of like the transition from Verbs that was this full service thing with a super small team to, you know, focusing on
being
applications.
Much more specialized, yeah.
Right.
So now if you're doing a website for somebody, it's an add-on or a gateway.
Yeah, it's usually an add-on or a gateway or, you know, someone that we've, you know, we still do websites for people that from when my brother and I started Verbs, you know, 12 years ago, we still have some of the same clients that that kind of came over. So it's fun. You know, we still do websites, but for every product that we build, it needs a landing page, it needs a marketing site. And, you know, it's a lot easier to make those when you understand, you know, how the product benefits the users and have all of that research already. So we don't, you know, advertise that we do it, but we do it as kind of, like you said, an add-on or,
value,
you know.
Yeah, value adds.
For sure.
That makes sense. So, yeah, and we went back and talked about it briefly, but when you're growing this, you know, did you see it? Did you have a game plan ahead of time when you were planning out the things that you do best to end up to where you are today? Or did this kind of, trying to figure out how to phrase it. Did you visualize it, to go back to what we talked about earlier, being where it is today? Or was this that it's gone beyond what you had initially thought of?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I have a pretty big vision for what I think Headway can be to, you know, to the city, to the state, kind of like our region in the United States and where we kind of play in the market there. And I don't think we're there yet. I think, you know, like I mentioned, we've added some people have left, you know, we've lost a couple of people, but I think, you know, it's all about keeping our focus on the right things, you know, building the right things for the right reasons with the right people. And, you know, we do, you know, we are growing right now, and so we're trying to, you know, hire the right people. And I think that's been the hardest thing for me is just, You know, how do you hire so many people that are super talented but might also be your friends? And how do you, you know, are you doing the same
how do
types
you
manage
of your friends?
And yeah, the same types of, you know, tests for hiring. You know, I mean, how do you keep it more objective than anything? And
sure.
Then how do you find people that are, you know, we don't have any remote people right now, but everything we do is kind of remote first. And so we're kind of building a, you know, small HQ of people here and then, you know, looking remote after that. But, you know, it's just, I think that's one of the biggest difficulties right now is that and then, you know, attracting the right clients, you know, so we can build the right agile teams. Ideally, we're working two developers with one designer. On, you know, dedicated to a team so that they can focus and kind of, you know, make sure that they're doing the right things and not juggling all of these balls at the same time or projects.
That's a nice ratio.
Yeah. And so I don't think we're there yet. I think, you know, we have a lot of aspirations that we take from other companies, you know, like Google, Thoughtbot, Fundsize, mm-hmm. who I know Anthony and got to know him, you know, through Epicurus and stuff like that.
Sure.
And, you know, other companies that I think are doing
really... Did you meet Rick at Epicurus as well?
Yeah, I met
Rick. I know he's not with Fundsize anymore, but...
Yeah, I met Rick. Yeah, and the whole team, I think, that was there.
Cool. I have met Anthony before, but I literally did not see him at Epicurus, but like every time I turned around,
yeah,
Rick and I were bumping into each other.
Gotcha.
So Rick's been to Creative South quite a bit, so
yeah,
it was nice. He wasn't able to make it this year because he was transitioning out of Fundsize into starting his own thing,
right?
So but cool. Well, so wrapping up, what do you see on the horizon for you guys?
For Headway, yeah, I think, you know, we've got, like I said, we're growing. We've got, I guess, more focus. As I mentioned, we, you know, kind of came from Verbs to where we are now at Headway and what we do, you know, paring that down a bit. But even, you know, more so just making sure we're doing things that are essential and I guess being intentional above all else and, you know, putting people over profit. And it's easier said than done when, you know, you're running a company like, you know, looking at runway and you're looking at certain things and you're just trying to build a healthy company and realize that you have, you know, you're supporting all these other people, you know, people that are employees, their families, that sort of thing. So always keeping that in mind. But I think just more of the same. And I think a lot of our principles are the, you know, are the same as when we aspired to, you know, when we first started Headway, months before we even, you know, were actually working on Headway. And so I think it's more of the same.
Awesome. Well, where can people find you online?
Yeah, people can find me at Averbs on all the platforms. So Twitter, Instagram, Dribbble, GitHub, wherever. And then, Headway is at headway.io or headway.io. Yeah, and then if you're interested in listening to our podcast, you can find us at seaworthyfm on Twitter.
Cool. And we'll link all of these in the show notes.
Perfect.
Cool. So we end every podcast by saying go out and hug some necks, which is basically just a way of, you know, saying don't be a stranger. Go out, meet friends, and yep. Introduce yourself. Would you mind taking us out?
What do you mean?
All you got to do is say, go out and hug some necks. Perfect.
All right, guys. Go hug some necks.
Awesome. Andrew, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks so much, Jason. Appreciate it. It's been fun.
You can find out more about Andrew on Twitter at Averbs, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA, or over at creativesouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Visit jack.ink/design and get up to $75 off your next order when you use promo code CSPodcast16. For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code CreativeSouth. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. Don't forget to head over to CreativeSouthGA.com right now to pick up your tickets for Creative South in April of 2017. We're looking forward to seeing you there and hugging some necks.
And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.